This process of speaking words correctly relies heavily on audio feedback. When you pronounce a word wrongly, you realise and change it the next time. However, our next interview tells us that this can't be the full story, as people who go deaf as adults remain able to produce clear speech for years afterwards, despite lacking an input of sound. How can this be? That's what I wanted to ask David Ostrey from McGill University in Montreal, Canada, who is currently investigating the neural control of speech production. In a paper in Nature Neuroscience this month, he's shown that the process relies not only on what we hear, but also what we feel as we speak.
One of the mysteries of human language is that people who go deaf as adults remain capable of producing intelligible speech for years in the absence of auditory input. And what we've been able to show is that the ability to control speech movements and indeed even to learn speech is a consequence of non-auditory receptors in the soft tissues and muscles of the vocal tract. The nervous system, in effect, uses sensory input from what we call the somatosensory system to guide speech movements, even in the total absence of sound.
And that's happening in all of us when we speak, not just in deaf people.
Absolutely. This is not a capacity which is limited to the deaf. For each of us, when we talk, we get two kinds of sensory input. We hear the sounds of our own voice through the auditory system, and we receive sensory signals from these mechanoreceptors, as they're called, in the soft tissues of the vocal tract, and both provide sensory support for speech.
And so your theory was then that deaf people are using this in order to keep on speaking after they go deaf.
What we sought to test in this experiment was that people who, following deafness, remain capable of intelligible speech do so on the basis of the sensory input they get from the somatosensory system.
And how did you approach this problem then? Because in your paper there's a really interesting diagram of the equipment you used.
First of all, we recruited a group of cochlear implant recipients. So these are people who went deaf as adults and received their implants as adults. And we brought them into the laboratory, and then we, for testing purposes, turned their implants off. So these are individuals who received absolutely no auditory input over the course of the experimental procedure. So in the experiment, we actually attached their jaw to a small computer-controlled robotic device. And the robot applies extremely subtle forces to the jaw, which alter its movement path. And they alter the movement path really by, on the order of millimeters. So as you talk, your jaw moves slightly outward as it moves down. This isn't what we normally do in speech production. And we had our subjects read words off a computer screen. And as they read them, the robot applied these subtle forces that slightly altered the movement path of the jaw. And over the course of several hundred different words, what we saw was that our subjects slowly compensated for the forces that the robot applied. In other words, what they did is they corrected their movement. To us, what was remarkable about this was twofold. One is that these were distortions of movements that were of the order of millimeters. For the most part, something you wouldn't imagine that would be of importance to the nervous system. But yet, when movements are wrong, even by this small amount, our speakers corrected for this subtle change in the movement path. Equally interesting is that these people did so in the complete absence of auditory input.
So the deaf group were just as good as the hearing group at adjusting their mouth movements in response to these tiny little manipulations?
Absolutely. So we saw that our implant recipients corrected for the forces that the robots applied to the same degree as our control subjects did. So in both cases, I guess what you want to say is that it's important to get the movements of speech right, even when they don't hear the sounds that they're producing.
So how come deaf people would eventually lose their capacity for speech then if they were so good at using these different types of feedback?
Clearly, auditory input is fundamental to being able to speak well. And in our implant subjects, we were amazed at how clearly they spoke. I guess what one would say is that we have two different sensory modalities that support speech. And under normal circumstances, we use both in combination. And I guess it's only reasonable to understand that when one of these is withdrawn, the other can perform to some reasonable level on its own, but clearly can't perform as well as the two in combination.
So finally then, what might the implications be of this work for perhaps teaching deaf people to retain speech for longer or developing speech in that way?
You know, these are early days when it comes to questions of what are the potential clinical payoffs. But I think clearly one obvious implication from this kind of work is that it's worth investing in therapies whose focus is as much on the movements as on the sounds of speech.
David Ostrey there.